This is an America Amplified special from the New England News Collaborative. I'm Indy Todd from WCAI's public affairs program, The Point, on Cape Cod. There were already tensions between year-round residents and summer people before the pandemic, but those tensions are escalating as people fear newcomers will bring the virus with them. On Cape Cod, a petition circulated to shut down the bridges so visitors couldn't come. Residents on Block Island in Rhode Island threatened to shut off electricity to discourage visitors. And police were called on an island in Maine after vigilantes knocked a tree over a driveway to keep out-of-staters in the house. Across the region, we've gotten reports of people trying to dissuade newcomers and second homeowners with nasty Facebook posts, notes on cars, and spitting and yelling. This hour, we're going to talk about these tensions, how rational these fears are, and how to move forward. And we want to hear your voice, whether you're a year-round resident, someone trying to escape a coronavirus hotspot, or a second homeowner. Join the conversation, 866-999-4626, or send us an email, americaamplified@npr.net. Joining us now is Julian Sear, Massachusetts State Senator representing Cape Cod and the Islands. He's also a member of the Cape Cod Reopening Task Force, and prior to holding elected office, he worked on policy and regulatory affairs at the Massachusetts Department of Public Health. Welcome.
Good to be with you, Mindy.
And also with us this hour is Smita Lahiri. She's a lecturer of anthropology and international affairs at the University of New Hampshire. Welcome to you.
Thank you for having me on, Mindy.
Sure. Smita, I want to start with you. As I just mentioned, this tension between year-rounders and newcomers has gotten really heated in some parts of New England. As a cultural anthropologist, what do you think is going on?
Well, as someone who's lived in New England for almost 20 years, but is still in some important ways an outsider, I've long noticed the different ways in which it seems to be possible to belong in a particular place. You know, whether it's Wolfboro, New Hampshire, or Manchester by the Sea, or Stonington, there seem to be so many different ways of having a local standing. As you mentioned, you can be a year-round resident, or a retiree, or a returnee. You could be someone who works at a job in the city, but is sort of has come back home and is treating it as sort of as an exurb. And all of these give people a different stake in local affairs. And for the most part, people, this mix of social positions, although it has a lot of practical implications for how any town or community functions, is fairly below the surface. It's pretty rare for these kinds of distinctions to become identity categories or to take on these moral or existential overtones. But in a situation where you have a pandemic, that is exactly what seems to be unfolding, right? You have out-of-staters who are accustomed to coming home to spend time in their second homes, and they're doing it in different circumstances, and they're finding themselves very judged, whether they're posing an increased risk of infection. There are other kinds of sort of more moral and cultural issues. You know, maybe there's some sort of implicit social contract of reciprocity and interdependence between temporary and permanent residents, and there's a sense that that's being broken. Maybe a sense of the privilege of outsiders, which is normally kept in abeyance, is sort of bubbling up. There's just things that are out of whack.
Out of whack. That's a good way to put it. Yeah. Julian, in addition to the petition to close the bridges, there were calls from residents of Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard to cancel or limit ferry service. And this fear is partly out of concern of overwhelming our health care system. Not only in our region, but across New England, there are smaller health care systems that just would not be able to handle a large number of COVID-19 cases. Luckily, we actually haven't been overwhelmed. And in fact, we closed a field hospital on Cape Cod recently because it was not being used. But part-time residents who are taking social distancing seriously might hear that and think, I should be able to come home in here and stay safe while keeping everyone else safe, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is always a challenge that seasonal communities like ours and across the region have, that, you know, 8 weeks or 12 weeks out of the year, you host a really big party. And when you're doing that, you've got to have health care, you've got to have public safety, you've got to have all the things that are prepared to welcome and play host to a significant population, you know, influx. In my hometown of Truro, you know, there's about 2,000 of us who live there year-round. In the summer, we think it might be up to 18,000 on a given day. So that sort of influx is something that our municipalities actually prepare for and we do every year, there was a lot of concern, particularly in mid-March, and especially on Nantucket with Nantucket Cottage Hospital and the Martha's Vineyard Hospital. We were anecdotally seeing a population influx. I think folks were understandably sort of saying, hey, if I'm going to ride this out, I want to go ride this out in my second home and not be stuck in the city. And there was a real concern that this would lead to community spread. We worked very quickly as a region, working with the hospitals and also municipal government and then leadership from the legislative delegation to get out a message to our seasonal residents who are coming to the region to say, hey, look, if you're coming here, you know, if you do come to your home, right, here are precautions you need to take, you know, a 14-day quarantine, bring supplies with you. The good news is that we did not see significant community spread from that population influx that we saw that first wave in mid-March. But, you know, now that it's May, we are seeing a second influx of population, a second wave, and it's going to get more and more challenging to do that. That's why I think we're working really hard as a region to be speaking with one voice, to make sure we get out uniform information to our residents, whether they be year-round or seasonal, and then ultimately to our visitors, because adherence to those public health precautions is what's going to keep everyone safe and is what's going to enable our healthcare system and our public health system and local government and others to be able to basically have that level of population in our communities again during the pandemic.
Right. On the line now is Susan from Rockland, Maine. Susan, thanks for joining us.
Hi.
Just to get a sense just to get a sense of where you stand, your daughter lives in Massachusetts, which by most measures is the third hardest hit state in the country with COVID-19. Your daughter wanted to come visit you in Maine during this pandemic. What did you say to her?
Oh, it was a hard call. I said no. I'm almost crying thinking about it. I want to see my kids. I have two daughters. One lives in Vermont and one lives in the Boston area. And I love them. I want to be with them. I want to hang out with them. We enjoy each other. We're Jewish, and Passover was in April. And, you know, they were not at the table. You know, we had a Zoom Seder. This is really hard.
Yeah. Now, you're making a choice to stay put, to tell your daughter not to come, and yet you have friends who are snowbirds returning to Maine. So how does that feel for you?
It's hard. I don't suffer from anxiety. It's not a thing in my life, but I have been more anxious in the last couple of months than ever. And one of the things that really gets it going is when I see someone on Facebook posting about how they're flying back or they're coming back. And I want to say, just please stay put. There's a lot we don't know, but we do know that staying put is one of the best ways to slow this thing down.
Yeah. Now, second homeowners would argue, though, that this is my property. I pay taxes and I have a right to come here. And what do you say to that?
Everybody's giving something up. Everybody. You know, there are people who are very social, like myself, who have given up engaging with people physically, you know, in the room, you know, mm-hmm. to be in the same place with people. Everybody's giving something up. And, you know, the more you have, arguably, the more you might have to give up, just by virtue of the fact that staying put means a lot of not doing other things.
Right.
If they really feel a tie to the community and a loyalty to the community in whatever place their second home is, then they should feel a tie and a respect and a responsibility to the members of that community who are struggling to keep things on an even keel.
Right. Susan, thank you much for talking with us. Susan lives in Rockland, Maine. Thanks for sharing your thoughts this morning. It's afternoon, I should say.
Thank you.
Thank you. And now we have Alan is calling from West Lebanon, New Hampshire. Hi, Alan.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead, Alan.
I think I just made my statement earlier, didn't I?
I didn't hear your statement. Can you go ahead and tell us what it is?
I have heard where out-of-staters have come into Vermont and everything, and have literally got yelled at, you know, for beginning of the state. They need to go back to where the state that they came from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't think that's necessary.
Right. Alan, thank you. Thanks for sharing your thoughts with us. We had an email before the show from Stephen Fasella, who lives in Quincy, Mass, and has a part-time residence in Provincetown on the Cape. And he says he thinks that the nasty and negative comments are coming from a very vocal minority, that most people don't feel this way, and we're just not hearing from them. Julian, what are your thoughts on that? Does he have a point?
Yeah. So I tend to find, particularly in this era, that the most nasty comments on any topic, including this, are coming from a pretty vocal minority. But I think people are concerned, particularly given how how limited the resources we have are. So, in Provincetown is over an hour's drive to the emergency department. That's an issue during July 4th week, and we do a big carnival parade in August, and that's a big issue, year-round. I think people have been worried initially, and I think that worry sort of persists, but I also, for most of the people I talk to, most Cape Codders and Islanders, who I represent, this is my district, we make our lives in the hospitality industry, and that's, the lives that we have year-round in this really special place is only made possible by our seasonal residents and by our visitors. So most of the constituents and people I talk to, whether they be business owners and our employees or even folks who are not in the workforce, want to find a way to be able to welcome people back when we can. And I think it's just really important. What I hear is that folks feel it's really important that we do it in a really deliberate way, that we're sharing information, that we're keeping everyone safe. But certainly, as in many areas in our public discourse, the sort of most nasty messages, kind of rise to the top. But that's not really who Cape Codders and Islanders are, certainly not in the Outer Cape, which is a very sort of welcoming place. But, there's definitely a concern, and I think it's important that we're getting information out for people, that whoever you are, if you're in these communities, here are the steps you need to take to keep yourself safe, keep your family safe, and keep everyone else safe.
Yeah, and I guess thinking of when we're seeing out-of-state license plates, we don't always necessarily know the whole story. That we had a young man on the Outer Cape who works at a grocery store in Orleans and was driving his mother's car that had Connecticut plates, and people yelling at him to go back to Connecticut. And he's a year-rounder. He lives here year-round. He just happened to have his mother's car. We hear lots of stories like that, so we have to keep that in mind as well. We've got an email here from KLM, who lives in the New Hampshire. Hampshire Lakes region, which has seen a distressing influx of out-of-state people, they say, especially from Massachusetts, which has a much higher rate of COVID-19 than New Hampshire. My decidedly unscientific observation in parking lots and outdoor places is that those who won't follow a stay-at-home order are also aren't concerned with safety measures such as wearing masks. This disregard for health of New Hampshire residents will only result in further tensions between the two states. We'd like to know what you think, second homeowners out there. What do you think? Should you hold tight and not travel to your second home? We hope you'll join the conversation, 866-999-4626, or shoot us an email, AmericaAmplified at NEPR.net. We have just about a minute to the break. Smita, your thoughts on yelling at people with...
I actually wanted to ask Julian a question, if I might. You mentioned earlier, you were talking about the dependence of Cape Cod on the hospitality industry, and you put together two classes of people, seasonal workers and visitors, or seasonal residents and visitors. And I wonder whether you think that the animus that we're hearing about is directed in particular at one group or the other.
All right, we're going to take that question after a break. This is a special from America Amplified special call-in program. We'd love to hear from you. 866-999-4626 is our number, or you can shoot us an email, americaamplified@nepr.net. Welcome back. This is an America Amplified special from the New England News Collaborative. I'm Mindy Todd from WCAI on Cape Cod. Today we're taking calls from around New England about tensions between year-round residents, second homeowners, and visitors. And we'd love for you to join the conversation, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Or send us an email at americaamplified@nepr.net. Our guests today are Smita Lahiri, a lecturer of anthropology and international International Affairs at the University of New Hampshire, and Julian Sear, Massachusetts State Senator representing Cape Cod and the Islands and a member of the Cape Cod Reopening Task Force. Before the break, Smita posed the question to you, Julian, about separating the categories of people you were talking about that are here in the Cape.
Yeah, that's a great question. And you know, you've been saying, you know, throughout the show, there is sort of an underlying tension. I think sometimes it boils over to an animus. You know, I grew up actually in the restaurant industry, spent, you know, 14 seasons waiting on tables. You know, and by the end of the season, there's certainly a level of exhaustion and a little bit of resentment towards people. On the Cape Cod, we call it Augustitis, right? Mm-hmm. But before those final few weeks before Labor Day, where the customers seem extra demanding. And you're also pretty wiped out. I do tend to think that there is a lot of it falls along class, and it's probably more directed to seasonal homeowners, actually, who are the people who are here now, right? So leisure accommodations are prohibited in Massachusetts through May 18th, and likely will be that prohibition will be continued. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. You do see day trippers. You do see people, you know, I've gone to a pretty discreet walking spot, you know, in my community and noticed there were some people there. And I was like, I've never seen these people before. Like, you know, glad they're here. But most of it, I think, is towards that dynamic between seasonal resident and year-round or sort of townie and outsider. But mm-hmm. as I sort of said earlier, you know, our entire way of life, right, we're sort of codependent on one another. And what I tend to find is that, you know, people make generalities, but then, you know, their friends who may, you know, sort of summer, you know, in Provincetown or in the region or whatever, if they know someone, then they have different feelings versus just, say, going to the post office and seeing a lot of New York or Connecticut license plates in the post office and having a visceral reaction to that.
Yeah. And Smita, when we're talking about this, in a lot of ways, it's the idea of home, right? Who belongs and when do they belong? And this can be painful for second homeowners and newcomers alike, right?
Yes. I've been thinking about this a lot, you know, in some part because the side of this that I know best is the through the perspective of people who are second homeowners. So I've had the pleasure of having been invited for weekends to homes. One of my friends has a home in the Lakes region, which has been in her family, you know, going back to the 1880s. Really a kind of, so there's a certain kind of iconic institution, right, of the summer home, which I think of as very much tied into a kind of family, professional, and regional identity. And one could even argue it has something to do with sort of whiteness and class as well. But anyhow, what I think is really moving and touching about those kinds of homes and how treasured they are is that they really are a repository of people, of family identity. They often are, you know, they often are shared out in a very deliberate way or partially rented. People work very hard to maintain them themselves. And in some ways, given that there is quite a lot of local churn in the population, some of these so-called summer people have arguably deeper roots than many people who might be year-round residents. So in other words, I guess what I'm saying is that there are blurred lines between everyone is not the same kind of local and everyone is not the same kind of part-timer. And I think that both groups of people are constantly seeing themselves through each other's eyes. And to be, I would think it would be quite painful to be brought up against the realization that you're not welcome in perhaps the place where you feel most at home.
Right. Yeah, good point. Let's talk to Chris, who's giving us a call from Eastham, Massachusetts. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you? Let me turn down the radio. I'm speaking to you from the parking lot of Boat Meadow Beach in Eastham. I am a full-time resident in Brooklyn, New York. I've owned a house on Cape Cod in Eastham for 15 years. I was interested in what the congressman said, and I very much agree with some of his comments about the ambivalence locals have. I have always experienced it as a kind of incipient, you know, grousing beginning at about Memorial Day as I stand in line at Stop and Shop about, you know, how Route 6 is going to be crowded and how much longer the commute is. And I totally get it. I have to say, as somebody who's been very engaged with the community here when I'm here, I have never felt any particular animus directed at me personally. Mm-hmm. And I see this more as a kind of a bonding of people who live here year round, have a certain type of life that's disrupted in the summer, but at the same time recognize that, you know, 3 months a year, they have to, their businesses have to earn the money for 12 months of the year. I was exposed to COVID in early March, and just after my exposure, and I didn't know it at the time, I came to Cape Cod to get my house ready for the summer rental. And while I was up here, I played golf with some friends. When I got back to New York, I discovered that I'd had this exposure, and I immediately contacted my friends. And for 2 weeks, the three of us remained in complete quarantine. We were on the phone with each other every day, checking in, being sure we were all right. Thank God we all were, mm-hmm. have been. I briefly considered, once I got back to New York, coming back to the Cape to quarantine up here. And my doctor strongly recommended against it for precisely some of the reasons that have been alluded to mm-hmm. here. There's only one hospital on Cape Cod, and there's many more medical outlets in New York. This is before New York was overwhelmed.
Right. And you're two hospitals in Cape Cod, and you're right. Yes, that was, I think, probably wise to, advice from your physician. Let's move on to talk to Mike, who's calling from Randolph, Vermont. Hi, Mike.
How are you?
Good.
It's finally we got a warm day.
Yes.
It's not going to snow today. So my comment is this. You know, I understand why people are hesitant about having people come from other places and all that. But if they are willing to want to deny people access to their home, then I think they better be willing to not collect their property taxes from those people. Mm-hmm. You know, people pay a lot of money in taxes, and I think sometimes people forget that, for some communities, there's a fairly significant source of income that comes from second homeowners, et cetera, before they deny them service, you know.
Right. Some communities here in the Cape, the second homeowners pay more taxes than the year-round owners. Mike, thanks for your thoughts. Ian is giving us a call from the Northeast Kingdom in Vermont. Good afternoon, Ian.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
Well, I just pulled over to talk to you folks. And on the rural road that I'm on, I just saw two New York cars and a Massachusetts car. We definitely depend on a tourist economy here, but it's a relatively poor area. We've got small hospital. We saw an influx of people that came in, took all the toilet paper, mm-hmm. you know, and they're in Cadillac Escalades mm-hmm. and stuff. You know, mm-hmm. it is very uncomfortable for us. I'm a flatlander. I've been here for 30 years, and I'm still an outsider.
Yeah, I was saying,
married a local college.
Yeah, flatlanders in Vermont, we call them Washashores here on Cape Cod, and of course, I am a Washashore. We're a flatlander.
Yeah, and my parents got married in Truro. I understand. I love Cape Cod.
Yeah.
I worked on Martha's Vineyard for a few years. But okay. it's a confusing and scary thing. And we don't, you know, Vermont's relatively safe right now. They want to stay that way.
Right.
And a woman from Maine that said she didn't bring her daughter home for a holiday, you know, that's looking out for others. And I don't think that the people that come up here on their mountain bikes, we've got a big mountain bike mountain here at Burke Mountain, and they've completely taxed us in the summertime just by being here in a healthy situation.
Right. And well, thanks for sharing your thoughts, Ian. We appreciate that. We'd love to hear from you. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. You can also send us an email, americaamplified@nepr.net. We've got a couple of emails here. This is from Kevin. Full-time residents are afraid that people who are not full-timers are going to bring a highly contagious virus into communities that those people are not invested in. That is after years of gentrification. This is cultural warfare now with a side order of biological warfare. Please stay home. We don't have the luxury of running to the city where there are more medical resources, where there is more of everything. And an email from Lizzie says, I've been coming to my camp in Midcoast, Maine from Florida for 5 months each year for over 20 years. I will be returning later this month, and I realize I will need to quarantine for 2 weeks, and I'm happy to do so. Karma is calling from the Berwicks of Maine. Hi, Karma.
Hi, how are you today?
Great.
Go ahead. The Berwicks are actually right on the border of New Hampshire. So we have a lot of interstate travel that goes on between the two areas. So we actually both are very much reliant on the fact that people do cross that border in order to help support the different businesses that are there. And one of the things that I wanted to mention is that if we're talking about a second homeowner, these people are generally relatively intelligent and responsible. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to afford a second home. And they tend to buy these homes in areas in which they are actually invested. They care about that community. That's why they chose to live there. And I believe that generally people want to do the right thing. You know, we're all good people inside. So if you notice that somebody is coming from out of town to be in their second home, it's also because they care about that community, and generally they're going to behave in a way that is looking out for the community. And these people also come and really help support the economics as well as the social aspect of these communities.
All right, come and think.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Finish your sentence. Go ahead.
I was going to say I can understand that people have fear right now about this contagion. There's a lot being said on the news every day. A lot of it is driving fears because all of the pseudoscience involved in it. But people need to also understand that people generally are actually looking out for the people around them.
Right.
This is not just people being greedy and not caring about other people. These are people that are still trying to be able to live their life to the fullest.
All right. Come and
things that they've already done.
Right. Thank you for calling in and sharing your thoughts with us. We appreciate that. Epidemiologists are being inundated with questions and are so busy we were unable to get someone to join us live. I did, however, get to ask Dr. Barry Bloom, a public health professor at Harvard University, a couple of questions at a press conference yesterday. I started talking to him about the escalating tensions between year-round residents and second homeowners or visitors, especially coming from hotspots. It seems we don't have enough data to indicate to what extent people traveling are bringing COVID-19 with them. So I asked, what data do we have and what should people consider before traveling to second homes or family summer vacations?
Gee, that's a really interesting question. No one has asked me that before. I think the name of the game is that we're going to have to go back to something approximating life as we knew it, but it will not be the same for a very long time. We have no rules in this country for restricting travel from Boston to Cape Cod or from anywhere in Massachusetts or Atlanta to Wyoming and Montana and Vermont. And I can't imagine tolerating that. As you know, there were protests when Connecticut was stopping cars coming from New York City to try to find out whether they could stop the epidemic. So people are going to move. I think the expectation of the epidemiologists, that's what's going to happen. That's why the expectation is there will be increases in cases and there will be spread. But the history of outbreaks and epidemics is by the time we know they're there, stopping travel, even international travel, is too late. In other words, every case that we see today was set up between 2 and 4 weeks ago. So if we can't test for people being asymptomatic carriers or spreaders, people get in their cars and are going to travel, and all we can do is hope people walk around with masks. B, we hope that people will abide by social distancing in whatever facilities they can. The expectation is that restaurants and public gathering places will probably be doing different things than they used to. But I believe we have no capacity to really restrict travel without reason. And as a consequence, they will bring, if it is not already there, they will bring it to their communities, and we just have to be on guard for it.
So for the people who are leaving hotspots like Greater Boston, New York City, or Fairfield County, Connecticut, to try to escape the virus, can we confidently say that they're safer in the areas they're going, which are often more rural?
Yeah, I think that one of the major variables is density. And one of the things is that if you stay in a student dormitory on Cape Cod, your risks are higher than if you have a small house half a mile away from someone who is a neighbor. That's obvious.
Got a couple of emails. Lisa, standing in line at Market Basket in Sandwich, Cape Cod, said, I overheard a returning resident from her winter home in Georgia complain about waiting in line and having to wear a mask. She totally ignored all the signs to stay home for 2 weeks upon returning to the state. People like that are what drives residents' fears. We have an anonymous email from Nantucket. The Stop and Shop shelves are bare. There hasn't been any toilet paper on the shelves for months now. There's no sanitizer, no cleaning supplies. How are we supposed to stay safe with a large influx of visitors if we don't even have the basics to support the existing population? And we would love to hear from you. We'd like to hear your thoughts on this, whether you're a second homeowner, a visitor, or a year-round resident. Got another an email from Connecticut. I just want to say, as a second homeowner on the Connecticut shoreline near Rhode Island, I'd like people to consider that we love our small communities just as much as the people who are there year-round, and the assumption that we wouldn't be careful or follow the rules is unfair. So we'd like to know what your thoughts are. Is this a minority, or what do you think? Should you stay in your year-round home? Should you come to your second home? Love to hear your thoughts as a year-rounder. Should you escape the hotspots? Should states be doing more to deter people from coming? Call 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626 to join the conversation, or send us an email at americaamplified@nepr.net. We'll talk more after a break. This is an America Amplified special from the New England News Collaborative. I'm Mindy Todd from WCAI on Cape Cod. What do you think? Are there any solutions out there that would work for year-round residents and visitors alike during the pandemic? Join the conversation at 866-999-4626 or send us an email at americaamplified@nepr.net. I want to welcome Patricia Miller to the show. She's a lawyer in New York and president of the Provincetown Part-Time Resident Taxpayers Association. Hi, Patricia.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Now, you rent an apartment in New York and own a home in Provincetown on the Cape. You're on the Cape now. Have you noticed tensions escalating between year-round residents and everyone else during the pandemic?
There certainly has been more vitriol, let's put it that way, with respect to social media. But what we did as a group is we sent a survey to our members. So rather than giving you my opinion, maybe it might be better.
Yeah,
to
I'd love to hear about
survey.
That. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah,
tell
okay.
us what.
So we surveyed. The membership, we got a little over 200 responses in 35 hours. We asked 10 questions. And one of the questions was, based on the negative social media, both from the public as well as some public officials in some respect, do you feel safe, welcome? 46% of those answered said they did not feel welcomed or safe. And the safe part, I guess, is a little disturbing, a little something to be worried about. When asked the question, though, would you still come to your home anyway, 78% said they would. Now, why is that? That's because a lot of our folks, at least in our association, again, we're part-time resident property owners in Provincetown. They're not just seasonal residents. I heard that in your show, some people saying that. They're not seasonal residents. They're actually here a lot. I'm here a lot. Here in the off-season, actually, when the economy needs its own boost, it's the part-timers that are here doing a lot of keeping the economy going. And as one of your guests mentioned, a lot of these homes, you know, have been in the families for generations. So people really feel like they're a part of the fabric of the community here in Provincetown. So that's part of the reason why people want to come back. In addition, people want to come that despite the vitriol, despite whatever is being said, they really want to help the economy, because part of the survey, also people said, the overwhelming response when asked about what are your primary concerns, particularly with this high season that Provincetown is facing. And the answer was not myself, oh my God, my house price is going to drop, or I'm not going to have a good time on the beach. The primary concern was that, you know, small businesses are going to take a hit, and the year-rounders who rely on working several jobs during the summer are also going to take a hit. Mm-hmm. And so they really kind of want to help, but they're not inclined to help in some degree based on this the minority voice, but a very loud voice that probably requires public officials and some uniform voice to quash it and to add a little more, you know, calm to it. And I would also add that in our survey, you know, if we go forward with self-quarantine for 14 days, if you're coming from out of state, like New York, for example, and you're coming to Massachusetts, Provincetown in particular, a lot of people said, 67% said that they would be okay with a self-quarantine, and they would bring their own supplies, recognizing that they don't want to deplete the resources. People are very mindful of the fact that Provincetown in particular, you know, may have limited resources on occasion, and that they're very mindful of that fact, and they don't want to deplete any resources. Mm-hmm. So if you take that and you say there's not going to be any short-term rentals, let's just say that's how the summer looks, that there is going to be a mandatory 14-day quarantine for people from the outside, and that in Provincetown there might be actually a limitation on public bathrooms. The part-timers then become pretty important in balancing, in the balance of safety and economy. Mm-hmm. So if you want to keep those small businesses going and the year-rounders going, the part-timers, it stands to reason, are a pretty good bet on that. Mm-hmm. They're a safe bet in that they have their own homes, and we have our own bathrooms, you know, and we can do a 14-day quarantine. So that and are very, very interested, at least again in our association with respect to Provincetown, to help the economy, to help the small businesses, to help the year-rounders that rely on, you know, on seasonal work, the high season, that is, to help them get over that hurdle.
Yeah. Patricia, thank you so much for coming on the show. And Patricia Miller, president of the Provincetown Part-Time Resident Taxpayers Association in Provincetown on Cape Cod. Julie and Patricia talked about public officials and business owners diffusing attention by speaking up. And, she brings up a good point about the importance of second homeowners to our economy.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think if we look at our season, and this is so anxious for us, right, because this is the time of year we're opening up, when you've got a very short 8 or 12-week season to make the vast, you know, bulk of your livelihood, the prospect of not having that and then not having a chance to be able to make an income for another 9 months until the next summer season is downright terrifying. So I think Patricia's right in that where sort of the most guaranteed season we're going to get is going to be from seasonal residents. That's why we have worked so hard to be speaking with one uniform voice with this Cape Cod Reopening Task Force. We put out guidance to seasonal residents about how they can come to our community safely. And really, I think that's the best hope of what a season is going to be. One of the challenges, though, we have here, you know, social media has been mentioned a lot. And I always suggest, you know, what I do is I just, you know, I don't look at the comments, because if I look at the comments as a public official, you're going to waste a lot of time. But the other twin challenge along with social media is a little bit the limitations and also challenge of, you know, we've got real small D, true democratic, you know, government in our small towns in New England. And that is a blessing in many ways. But when it comes to a pandemic where, you know, you really need to have decisions being led by evidence, by science, with expertise, it becomes really difficult when, you know, even on Cape Cod, we have 15 towns. I represent 23 towns across the region. And so that parochialism, I often find, is where sometimes some of this inconsistent information, some of the negativity can flare mm-hmm. up. So that's why we're really trying as a region to make sure that we're essentially sort of getting everyone in the same room, whether you're, you know, a municipal leader, whether you're the business community, elected officials. We have county government in Barstool County, which does some help, our hospitals and healthcare. But it's a real challenge given just, you know, structurally how small-time government works.
And you're right, that one voice is important. And then you take that larger and you've got states with different leadership. And, you know, if a beach opens in Maine, you're going to have people from New Hampshire, if their beaches are closed, go, you know, if you're not all on the same page,
exactly.
it could get difficult. Smita, I want to ask you,
go ahead.
I was going to ask you, with all this uncertainty right now and fear about what will happen, anthropologists use this term moral panic. And I wondered what that is and if that applies here.
Yeah. Well, so a moral panic is a concept that refers to the fear and perception of threat that arises often in response to what may be a complex situation, but which then gets managed by locating it on particular people or maybe a particular kind of behavior, or one can think of it as a sort of, it has elements of scapegoating, let's say, but the main idea is that it's a channeling of deep-seated anxieties in a direction that is not necessarily functional or rational in an instrumental way as much as it is sort of symbolic and anxiety-reducing. So, I'd like to loop back to a few of the things that some of the callers said, which were so interesting. The gentleman who spoke about generations of cultural and economic warfare through gentrification now being followed by biological warfare. I mean, I think that there's some pretty strong feelings going on over there. And I think it is very important, really, to look at the sort of the longstanding, sort of deep-seated kinds of tensions and ambivalences, and winners and losers, really, as well, that are part of the stories of these towns and communities. And it's going to be different in each place. The arrival of part-timers or the expansion of tourism, in many cases, really revitalized communities mm-hmm. that were experiencing economic depression at various points. But even when a community comes back, it doesn't necessarily come back in the same way, and people often still feel a sense of grief or a sense of having been left behind, mm-hmm. even when other sections of the local population are doing well. Mm-hmm. So another interesting comment, had to do with this idea. Oh, the gentleman from Brooklyn, mm-hmm. who's in Eastham, who said, what did he say? He said, well, you know, yeah, I'm aware of the sort of code through which locals kind of signal to each other the sort of us and them mm-hmm. Lines between sort of part-timers and full-timers. But I always just assume that was sort of part of their, just a kind of cultural bonding thing. And I think that there's something to that.
Right. Yeah.
But I also think that when a situation that really arouses people's sense of anxiety and uncertainty arises, then those are those fairly innocuous cultural idioms can become the vehicle of real negativity and
yes, absolutely. Yeah. Let's get to the phones. We got a few people going to get in before we end the hour. Kendra is calling from North Conway, New Hampshire. Hi, Kendra.
Hello. How are you today?
Great. Do you have a comment for us?
As someone that grew up in Maine and I'm currently in North Conway, I've definitely grown up hearing a lot of the negativity towards having people come up and take our space over, as well as experience a lot of the positivity of the boost in income for myself and my family. And personally, I think one of the most important things we need to recognize and do is realize that we don't have control over one another. Mm-hmm. And to trust each other, trust that those that are coming up here are going to do what's right, and treating them with hate is not going to get our desired results. But if we're welcoming to them and we express our needs and say our hopes for what they will bring with them to bring a boost to our economy, and in accepting that we do rely on them in a lot of ways,
right,
to come up here, letting them come, I think it's really important as in treating them with respect and understanding that hopefully if we express our needs, that we need them to take care of us as well and to do all these social distancing protocols.
In other words, follow the rules, right, Kendra? Thank you for calling. Jason is calling from Randolph, Vermont. Hi, Jason.
Hi, thanks for taking my
call.
Go ahead. It's been a great discussion and a very interesting one, and I really thank you for doing the topic. I think what this boils down to, and I'll just make two brief points. One, it's far less about license plates than it is about the engaged versus the disengaged. I had to run out to do some errands today, and I saw no fewer than three people wearing face masks with their nose sticking out above them. Mm-hmm. I don't know where those people were from. They're just clearly not getting all the messages. So that's it's not worrying about someone being from Massachusetts or from Maine or New York. It's worrying about someone who's actually following the instructions. And the final point I wanted to make is I just want to say how proud I was of my governor last night, Phil Scott, who really stood up. We had a very ugly incident that occurred in the middle part of the state with someone from New York being harassed. And he stood up at his news conference and said, this is unacceptable. This is not who we are as a state, and actually reached out and contacted the gentleman in question. And so just a very impressive response and a nice showing from him. So I just wanted to say, he really did a great job of representing the state on that one. And thank you very much for taking my call.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for calling. Amy is calling from Eastham, Massachusetts. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Mindy. And hi, Julian.
Hi, Amy.
I'm on the select board here in Eastham. And, you know, we're struggling to figure out how we're going to do things. Mm-hmm. I'm, you know, horrified to hear what some of these part-time residents are going through. Because they're not, I mean, people are treating them like tourists, and they're not tourists. They're homeowners. And most of them that I've seen, anyway, my friends that I've talked to, really know what they're doing. And they're self-quarantining. They're bringing everything with them. They're not taking any unnecessary risks. They don't want to get sick. Most of them are, you know, over 60 or well over 60. And I really think if we disenfranchise that group of people, you know, our local businesses are going to be in even bigger trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, Amy, you bring up some good points.
You know?
And Amy, the point, we're trying to figure out what to do. I think everybody's in that boat now trying to figure out how we move forward. Thank you for the call. Let's get in Ian, who's calling from Bar Harbor, Maine. Hi, Ian. Ian, are you there? Okay, let's move on to Richard, who's calling from Martha's Vineyard. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I just wanted to make a couple quick points.
Sure, go ahead.
One is travel. I live on Martha's Vineyard, so travel could be restricted. The idea of people coming from hot spots and coming to the vineyard because they have second homes and have the right to do that is on some level playing Russian roulette. And then third, the idea that you have nuance and subtle suggestions, it seems obvious to me that people, you actually need the harsher suggestions because people do not do exactly what you want them to do. So you have mm-hmm. to think in terms of safety and very clear and somewhat severe restrictions. That's my point of view. I wanted to make that point. And I think travel can be controlled going to Martha's Vineyard.
All right. Thank you for the call, Richard. Just got a couple of minutes left, and Julian and Smita, I want to get some last thoughts in for you. Julian, why don't you go first?
You know, I've been thinking, you know, throughout our conversation this afternoon, you know, when you live on a peninsula or on an island or even in a rural community, you know, you've got to be in it together. There's an interconnectedness that we have. The caller from Eastham, Brooklyn, was talking about the bond in our community, and I think that is sort of one of the most important sort of things I think that all of us need to take from this. I also think, you know, from a Cape Cod and Islands perspective, We've put out very clear, consistent information, and we're going to continue to do so.
Okay, let me get Smita in just like 20 seconds. Smita, go ahead.
Yep. Okay, so one hyper-local point, which is that while there certainly may be places where outsiders have brought in the virus, community transmission has certainly occurred in places in New England because of travel abroad by locals. So that's something to keep in mind. The other thing is I really think we can't divorce what's going on locally from the national rhetoric where so much of the discourse around keeping America safe.
Thank you, Smita. We have to leave it there. Smita Lihira and Julian Sear, thank you for being with us this hour. I'm Indy Todd from WCAI. This has been an America Amplified special from the New England News Collaborative. This show is part of a series of regional specials. Next Thursday, join Vermont Public Radio to continue exploring the impact of coronavirus in New England. Our program was produced by me and Morgan Springer. Our executive producer is John Dankowski. Special thanks to Mark Manuelian, Dan Tridle, and Elsa Partan. Vanessa Del Torre is the executive editor of the New England News Collaborative. American Amplified is the New England News Collaborative, are made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.